slot and shoots. He scores. Quinn Hughes in overtime, and he's the leading rookie scorer in the NHL.
Your Vancouver Canucks live here.
Here's Horvat with a partial break down the left wing. Bo Horvat, he scores. The captain does it again.
This is Canucks Central with Bick and the Boss on Sportsnet 650.
Happy Monday, everybody. It is Canucks Central with Craig McEwen and Chad Day stepping in as Bick Nizar once again moves away from the boss into a better time slot, a better position, as he continues to work on his career. This is Canucks Central, brought to you by Avenue Machinery. Give yourselves the Avenue advantage and stay under the cap by saving thousands on select Kubota skid steers and excavators. Visit avenuemachinery.ca. Of course, our show fully interactive. One way to contribute is the Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650. Dunbar Lumber, the smart alternative. Visit Dunbar Lumber on Bridge Street in Ladner and Arbutus in Vancouver, or online at dunbarlumber.com. Chad Day, busy weekend for the Vancouver Canucks. Some business taken care of on the trade front, the draft situation, Jake Virtanen finally on his way out of town by the looks of things, and free agency just around the corner. So when you sit back and look at what the Canucks accomplished and what they're looking to do, what's the biggest story that jumps out to you after a very impactful weekend for the hockey team?
Yeah, it was super eventful, wasn't it? I mean, you were right along for the ride all weekend long with the draft. I think for me, C-Mac, is the Oliver Ekman-Larsson deal. You know, this deal, you know, bringing in a guy very polarizing to this market already with, you know, how he has played over the past couple of seasons, along with the price tag that comes along with him, even though the Coyotes are eating some money. I think that's going to be the most fascinating, you know, thing going into next season, just to see how he plays, if he can, you know, right the ship and go from there. I think, you know, the Connor Garland ad is great. He's, you know, a top six forward, top nine forward that is going to give you some edge. And, you know, watching some stuff and doing some more research into him over the weekend, he's a guy that goes to the dirty areas. He loves to score goals. He doesn't care if he's the garbage man, Johnny on the spot. It doesn't matter to him. And for a guy that's 5'9", you love to see that heart and determination, and he's got a good skill set for that. So I think, you know, realistically, he's going to be the guy that, you know, long term, that could really help fill out the Canucks' top six, top nine problems. But of course, all the questions are going to be around Oliver Ekman-Larsson. You know, the analytics community, you've seen the analytics on him. You know, it hasn't been pretty. You know, but with a fresh change of scenery, C-Mac, does this change his game now that he's north of 30?
Yeah, it has to change his game. Listen, we had Daniel Sedin on our draft coverage on Saturday, and he talked about a couple things that were really, you know, interesting to hear from his part. First of all, Oliver Ekman-Larsson owned the fact that he hadn't played all that well the last couple of years in Arizona. There was a coaching change, his mother passed away, and a number of different circumstances on there. But he, Ekman-Larsson, doesn't feel like he's lost everything. It was a step back, a couple years to forget for him, but he owns that. So that's great to hear that he's owning the fact that he didn't play all that well. And then secondly, when it comes to what Daniel Sedin said, he said, this guy's a great leader, the way he competes, the way he shows up every day. And that is important when you're trying to build your culture, your identity, and teach some younger defensemen in Hughes and Rathbone the way to do things the proper way. So this, to me, is something that, hey, if Ekman-Larsson can be what Alex Edler was at 30, and for the next, you know, 6 years, like Edler now 36, if we can see the same type of production from him, bit different defenseman obviously, that's a win for me, especially with the Coyotes retaining some of the money in this deal. And, you know, Vancouver needed to be bold, they needed to be aggressive, and Jim Benning talked about that. And this is a time with a flat cap that GMs have to think a little bit outside the box. They're going to have to take some big risks, some big innings case. He does that here. But this team chat, in my opinion, is so much better on this Monday than they were last week when we started talking about everything leading into the draft, for the simple fact that they're top nine, very good if you look at their forwards. Their defense with Ekman-Larsson is better than what it was without him. So I see the improvements in what the hockey club has done. I see a weaker division that they're playing in, and I see nothing but upside for this hockey team moving forward, as long as they can address some other areas here, whether it's through a trade or free agency, a right shot D, someone to play with Quinn Hughes, and it obviously remains to be seen what they can do with Nate Schmidt, if anything, or Braden Holtby.
Totally. And you know what the big thing to see, Mac, is when you bring in a guy like Oliver Ekman-Larsson, you're right. Your team on defense right now is better. And I think a lot of people in this market look at the fact that, you know, we've had these anchor contracts, Louis Erickson, you know, Jay Beagle and Antoine Roussel to an extent, you know, for the past couple of years. And you're 1 year away from getting rid of those deals. And you bring in a guy who, from a numbers perspective, is on the decline. And depending on who you talk to around the league, believe that as well, at a significant price tag for another 5-6 years. So I think that's, you know, the big problem people have in this market. I think we're not going to truly know how this is going to turn out, of course, with any trade, for the next couple of years. So, you know, I choose to take the patience on ruling, you know, what side this trade is going to, you know, come down on. I do believe that, you know, the additions of Ekman and Larsson, there's no question, make this team better next year. For Jim Benning, you know, when he came into this offseason, for all the criticism, you know, that he has taken for constructing this roster and, you know, the draft capital and everything, he goes out and trades, you know, the number nine overall pick. That gets people up in arms, plus taking back this bad money. And he's not taking on bad money. He got rid of the bad money, but he's taking on more in Ekman-Larsson. But really, what do people expect? The guy's going to be fighting for his job. You know, Elliot Friedman on 31 Thoughts, the podcast, as well as on, and reiterated the same fact today on Donnie and Dolly on Check, was, you know, if this season doesn't go well, you know, heads are going to roll for the most part. So, and that's the thing that's going to be fascinating as we push forward in this offseason.
We have a jam-packed show here on Bick and the Boss, Canuck Central as well here on Sportsnet 650. Luke Fox will be joining us in the 2 o'clock hour. The voice of the Vancouver Canucks, Brendan Batchelor, at 1:30. And right now, we are pleased to welcome to the show one of the prospects the Canucks picked up this weekend in the NHL draft, Connor Lockhart, a sixth-round selection of the Vancouver Canucks. And Connor, welcome to the show, and how good does it feel to be a member of this hockey team?
Yeah, hey guys, thanks for having me here. It's an awesome feeling for sure. I mean, being a Canadian kid from Ottawa, Ontario, you definitely watch a lot of Canadian hockey, and just seeing the, you know, the success and the development that the Vancouver Canucks have had in the recent years, and just the past in general, it's really exciting for me and my family just to, you know, experience this past weekend and, you know, just see what's hopefully in store for me in the future. And I'm just really happy to be a part of such a great organization.
Connor, thanks so much for doing this, and congratulations. So talk to us a little bit about your game when you analyze what you do on the ice. What, in your mind, is your biggest strength that you're going to bring to this franchise?
Yeah, I mean, I think my biggest strength overall to my game is my skating. I think, especially nowadays, the game's so fast, and it's obviously, you know, so fast, so skilled, and you have to make plays very quickly. And I think my speed really complements my game, you know, being able to win puck battles, win races, and open up ice for myself and my line mates. But I think, you know, my speed and my competitiveness, being a smaller guy, I think that's something that's it's really important to have in your toolbox. But, you know, I'm not afraid to shy away from the dirty areas and the battles. So that's something that I can use to, you know, once again, open up you know, space and opportunity for my line mates. But I also like to be a little bit selfish with the puck sometimes. I like to shoot the puck, and that's something that I'm going to really try and do, you know, this upcoming year with my junior team. And I'm a really competitive person. I love to win, and whatever I'm told to do by, any coaching staff, that's what I'm going to do to try and help the team win.
Connor Lockhart, who the Canucks selected 178th overall in this past weekend's NHL draft, joins us here on Canucks Central. And one scout I read said, Connor, that he watched your tape from your age 16 season on, and you look better than the first and second round picks coming out of the OHL. I guess you talked about your tenacity, you talked about your skill set. What does that do for your ego when you hear, you know, some scouts saying that actually you were better than some of the players that were selected ahead of you in the draft?
Yeah, you know, obviously it's really nice to hear the support, and you know, not only from, you know, that that scout, I did see that article, but also just in general from the I've gotten nothing but, you know, great remarks and really, really nice and caring comments from all the Canucks fans and my social media. So, you know, it's really nice to hear all that stuff, and just to hear that everybody's on board with you being a part of the organization. And obviously it's nice to hear, like I said, but at the same time, I really try to not let that get to my head. And, you know, I know, especially with this year, with the draft, it was such a crazy year. And with me being in the OHL, we were the only league in this Canadian Hockey League to not have a season. So that definitely took a bit of a role in, you know, where I was selected when it comes to what pick and round in the draft, not being able to be exposed. But, you know, I'm totally ecstatic to be a part of the Canucks. And my mindset now is just to, you know, use that as motivation to make the Canucks look really smart for believing in me and taking a chance on me with their sixth-round pick and hopefully one day earn a contract. But, just overall, it's obviously super nice and super humbling to hear that that really nice comment there in that article, and just all the support in general from the fans.
Connor Lockhart, our guest here on Bick and the Boss, Sportsnet 650, drafted in the sixth round by the Canucks this past weekend in the 2021 NHL entry draft. Connor, you talked a little bit there about, you know, this past season. Obviously, there wasn't an OHL season. How tough was that on you, and what did you do to stay focused through the course of the year?
Yeah, I know for sure it was really tough. I mean, not even just, you know, being able to play in your draft year, that alone is pretty tough on me mentally, but just not being able to, you know, see my teammates and, you know, just live another year playing junior hockey, because it's going to be some of the best years of your life. But, you know, I'm a really driven and competitive person, and, you know, my mindset was I'm going to do everything I can to be ready. And whenever someone knocks on the door, I'm going to be ready to go, and I'm going to be ready to, you know, be the best player on and off the ice that I can be. And with us not having a season, it was really frustrating, and I was looking at going to play overseas in Europe in Finland around like the March time of year. But at that time, there was rumblings that the OHL was going to have a potential shortened season, so it was a big question mark and a bit of a risk or reward type situation to go over. And I decided to stay and just work on my game. That I really thought as well, I had a great opportunity to represent Canada there at the under-18 World Championships, but, you know, things maybe didn't work out the way I would have liked to, and I wasn't selected for the team. But that's just more motivation to keep training like I have been. And especially now that, you know, the lights, we're almost at the end of the tunnel here with a scheduled OHL season. I've just been continuing to train and by working out, skating, and, you know, even just golfing, getting outside, staying fit with my friends. And, you know, whenever the next time comes for me to be at, whether it's development camp in Vancouver or, you know, main camp in Erie or main camp in Vancouver, I'll be ready to be a part of it and put my best foot forward.
Yeah, is that the silver lining maybe in this, Connor, that you didn't get to play games, and obviously frustrating as you know what, but the fact of the matter is the game of hockey doesn't stop. You could get stronger. You could work on things during this time and make yourself a better hockey player for this upcoming season.
Yeah, for sure. And that's kind of my mentality, I think. You know, I'm going to play with the hand I'm dealt. And, you know, with that being said, it's just, you know, doing everything I can and working with the resources I have. I'm really fortunate to have a great support system back home, with whether it's, you know, my family, my agent, my on-ice trainer, my off-ice trainer, and I've just been taking advantage of it. And, I mean, for me as a smaller guy, a lot of question marks this year with my draft year. It was my, you know, can he handle the strength of older players and the speed? And I think I've really had almost 18 months to really completely dial it in to, you know, work on my game and make my weakest parts of my game my strongest parts. So I've really taken advantage of this, and regardless if I haven't played any games, I think, you know, that really doesn't affect how the type of player I'm going to be when I go and start playing some meaningful hockey again, because I've really had, you know, more time than any time to really sharpen my skills, because in the season you got so much stuff going on, but I've had almost 18 months to completely work on, you know, sharpening my skills, rounding out my game, and making me ready to hopefully at some point down the road in the near future make the jump professionally, but also come back to junior with my team and be a top dog there.
Connor, so where were you this weekend, and how did you hear the news? Were you monitoring the draft on Saturday when you were selected by the Canucks in the sixth round?
Yeah, no, I had the draft on all day Saturday, so it was a little bit of a wait to hear my name called, but that's, you know, that doesn't matter to me at all. Just to hear my name called by the Canucks was a huge weight off my shoulders, and it's obviously, you know, a huge day, probably the best day of my life for myself and my family, just to see, you know, all the years of hard work pay off for all of us. But I had the TV on in my living room, and then, you know, I knew there's a certain group of teams that had some high interest in me, with Vancouver being one of them. So, you know, maybe when there was a stretch where there were teams that, you know, I haven't been in contact with at all this year, then, you know, I'd maybe go upstairs, you know, just take my mind off it a little bit just to kill the time, so I'm not sitting there waiting. But yeah, when Vancouver called my name, I was right there, and it was obviously just an honor to hear that, and pretty emotional for myself and my family when that happened.
In reading some of the scouting reports on you, Connor, it says, you know, smart playmaker, keeps his head up, can find his teammates, slides into good spots, has that shot. So I'll ask you about role models or growing up, or is there a player that either plays in junior or the National Hockey League that you pattern yourself after?
Yeah, I mean, you know, obviously no one's going to be a straight up comparable to a guy in the NHL. Everybody's different, but I like to watch maybe some undersized, skilled, faster players that you know, I can see myself, you know, taking things out of their game and implicating it into mine. And, you know, for example, I've always liked watching Travis Konecny on the Philadelphia Flyers, and especially this year I started watching a lot more of Kyler Yamamoto on the Oilers, and Hoglander on, you know, the Vancouver Canucks, which is another, you know, better skating, some undersized player. And I just like the way they play, you know, with a competitive edge and a high-end skill set. And that's just something that, you know, I can watch as a player like me, and, you know, be able to pick parts of their game and work on implicating it into my game.
Yeah, and they also picked up another pretty good player in Connor Garland this this past few days. So keep an eye out on him and watch him this year as well.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I saw a little bit of his games this year because, you know, my former teammate Jamie Drysdale was selected by Anaheim last year. He played with me in Erie, and so they were in the same division as Arizona. So I got to watch him play last year, and that's another guy that he's really starting to take his game to another level, and I think, you know, he's obviously going to be a big part of the Canucks team this year, so he'll be a player I'll be watching for sure.
Well, we really appreciate you doing this today, taking the time to chat with us, and, you know, best of luck this summer working out, and we hope to see you in Vancouver for a development camp sometime soon. Thanks very much for doing this, Connor.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you. I really appreciate it.
Connor Lockhart, the Canucks sixth-round selection, 178th overall in this past weekend's NHL draft. Sounds promising there, Chad, in the way he approaches the game, just the competitiveness. You'd love to hear players talk about how they want to compete and battle hard.
Yeah, very impressive. You know, loved what he had to say about his game and what he did during, you know, what was a challenging year for a lot of young hockey players, not having a season. So, it's going to be exciting to see, Craig, how he develops, because, you know, you read the scouting reports on him. There's some really high upside with Connor Lockhart, and he could end up being a steal in the mid rounds there for the Vancouver Canucks.
We can only hope so. And what we can also hope is it's time to get some great submissions on the Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650. It is Don't At Me.
Your takes uninterrupted. Don't At Me.
Hey, Chad, don't at me. This in on the Dunbar Lumber text inbox. I guarantee you that no matter what, OEL won't be as bad as Louis Erickson 6 years here. All that matters is that Louis Erickson is gone.
I don't think anybody's going to at you for that because, man, Louis Erickson coming into Vancouver, nobody in this market, you know, thought it would end the way it did with Louis. It just didn't work. You know, the guy came in here after a 30-goal season in Boston, and yeah, the rest is history. Let's move on from that, Craig. Don't at me. Garland will sign more years than Quinn. That's from Marcus and Gibson's.
I'm not so sure about that. But the one good thing about hearing, you know, the interview we just did there, like, you know, it's one of those things, Chad, where the Quinn Hughes, you know, comparisons or talk about him in what he's doing and now Garland coming here, you know, it just makes the team better. Honestly, it's one of those things where this team is a better hockey team than what they were before the NHL draft started. Don't at me. This is from Keith the Water Guy. Beagle, Roussel, and Erickson will combine to score 40-plus goals next season.
Yeah, I'm adding him at that one. Like, come on. I don't think that is going to happen. Do you, Craig?
No, I do not believe that is the case.
Don't at me. People need to stop looking at OEL for ninth overall. It's Garland for number nine. You know, when that trade came down, that was kind of my thinking, Craig, is, you know, you look at the money going out and the money, you know, that was coming in with OEL. Sure, is number nine a bit of an overpay for Connor Garland based on, you know, some of the other market prices that were going there ahead of the draft? But, you know, I can't at this unsigned text with that one.
Don't at me, but I'd rather have less dead money on the roster than more, even if OEL ends his contract as a third pairing guy. Got to take risks in order to win in sports. And that's exactly it, Chad, is that we're in a situation where, you know, the Canucks needed some cap flexibility to get some business done because there's a few players that need to be signed at the moment. But in all reality, Jim Benning and other GMs around the league now have to look at things a little bit differently in a flat cap era because they have to get creative. They have to do things that, you know, they didn't want to do. And I could pretty much guarantee that if we didn't have a pandemic and the cap was rising up and up and up and up, the Canucks wouldn't have done this deal. But the fact of the matter is it's a flat cap. They needed to try something. They needed to be creative and they went out and got it done.
Totally. Here's one that will combat the very optimistic views of Keith the Water Guy and Beagle, Roussel, and Erickson combining to score 40-plus goals next year. Don't at me. Beagle, Erickson, and Roussel will combine for less than 20 points for the Yotes. That's Ben from Kitts. I'm gonna hope that they get over 20 points, but who knows? Does Louis Erickson, you know, stay there? You know, does Antoine Roussel or maybe Jay Beagle get flipped to another team and some salary retention? We just don't know that yet.
Yeah, this one from West End Mike. Don't at me. Jim Benning did a great job this weekend. Still needs to add a veteran presence in the forward group. Someone like Eric Staal, I would agree with that in the sense that they need a few more pieces added. But my thought, Chad, would be on the back end. They need to add a defenseman.
Oh, totally. I think right now the back end is going to need some work, and I think we're going to have to wait and see what happens with guys like Ryan Suter and Dougie Hamilton before we get a little bit more clarity on the Nate Schmidt situation. But I think going into free agency, that's something that the Canucks are going to be looking to do. Is, and you know, Jim Benning's talked about getting you know, a little bit bigger and a little bit more defensive with that, with the 5-6 spot on the hockey club. So it'll be interesting to see how that all plays out over the next couple of weeks.
Still lots more to come here on Canucks Central, including the voice of the Vancouver Canucks. Brendan Batchelor will be stopping by next, and we'll get his thoughts on the OEL trade, the draft, free agency, and a whole lot more. You're listening to Bick and the Boss on Sportsnet 650.
This is your destination for all things Canucks. This is Canucks Central with Bick and the Boss on Sportsnet 650.
Well, there is a boss today. No Bick. Bick has once again stepped up in the lineup and working with Jamie Dodd on the Rintoul and Sermon show this week. And I guess it just goes to show you what a Swiss Army knife Bick is. He can work any show. Middays, mornings, afternoon drive. Chad Day filling in for Bick. And you got some big shoes to fill, buddy. You've got to, you know, come with it because, as I said, Bick is Mr. Everything on the station.
He sure is, and you're right. Swiss Army knife. He reminds me of a Yannick Hansen type on the Vancouver Canucks. You know, going up and down the lineup here and there. So you're right. I'll do my best to fill Bick's shoes today for you, Craig.
Yeah, few have been able to do it, but many have tried. anyways, you're listening to Canucks Central. Canucks Central is brought to you by Avenue Machinery. Give yourself the Avenue advantage and stay under the cap by saving thousands on select Kubota skid steers and excavators. Visit avenuemachinery.ca. Canuck news rolling in today as we find out that Olli Juolevi has been qualified. Jace Howerlick and Mark Michaelis will not be qualified. I guess no real surprise there, Chad, the fact that Juolevi is the one that they're keeping around out of those three.
Oh, totally. I think, you know, with Olli Juolevi, he now, with the departure of Jake Virtanen, becomes the other first-round pick of Jim Benning that is polarizing in this market. And it'll be fascinating to see how he develops over the next couple of seasons. And that was a no-brainer. Am I a little bit surprised? I thought Jace Howerlick played, you know, pretty decent towards the end of the season. I thought maybe, you know, he would get a qualifying offer, but that's not the case. But that doesn't mean, you know, that a deal can't be worked out, you know, at a later date. Not too surprised on Mark Michaelis, but it'll be interesting, C-Mac, to see what they do now after the additions of Dickinson and Garland. And once they get them under contract, how does the fourth line look? You've got Tyler Motte already in place. You know, who's going to play center? Jay Beagle would have been that guy. So do they bring a guy like Brandon Sutter back? You know, there's still some questions up front, but on the back end as well.
Questions? I'm sure Brendan Batchelor has answers. Batch, the voice of Vancouver Canucks here on Sportsnet 650, joining us. And Brendan, I'll start there where Chad was going with that. What's that fourth line going to look like as Canuckville needs to panic about something now that the top nine look pretty good?
Yeah, I guess we'll find out coming up in free agency. Based on some of the things Jim Benning has said, it wouldn't surprise me if they look to bring Brandon Sutter back on a cheaper, shorter-term contract, if that's something that he would be agreeable to. You know, there has been some talk that they liked what they saw to a certain extent from Travis Boyd. So whether he's a guy that they look to bring back or if they go in a different direction in free agency. But I would imagine that, you know, the key for who's going to center that fourth line is that it's going to be a cost-effective player that doesn't take up too much of the salary cap space that they're going to need to use on the back end. And then, you know, rounding out that fourth line, assuming no injuries, you would think Tyler Motte and probably Matthew Highmore, although that position I'm sure will be up for grabs going into training camp with, you know, guys like Jonah Gadjevich and other players they have in the system competing to try and play on that fourth line and make the hockey club to start the year.
Batch, Jake Virtanen gets bought out by the Vancouver Canucks, and not to really anybody's surprise there. In your mind, what will his legacy be with his time spent with the Vancouver Canucks?
It will be both a player and a person that fell very short of expectations. And, you know, from a hockey sense, looking back, should he have been drafted as high as he was? Was there too much expectation put on him to play at a level that he was never going to reach at? That's something that can be debated. But, you know, it's been a bad ending for Jake Virtanen in Vancouver, both from a hockey perspective and obviously with the off-ice issues from a personal perspective. He's a player that the organization has spent a lot of time and effort trying to develop, trying to hone into, you know, the NHL player that on the ice, you know, we've seen the upside, we've seen the flashes, but it never materialized for him in Vancouver. In my opinion, it's unlikely to materialize for him as a player going forward at the NHL level. And then, you know, certainly he's going to be remembered for the obvious, unfortunate off-ice things that he's got himself involved with, which, you know, to be honest, he has no one to blame but himself.
So, Batch, now that Virtanen's gone, now that Roussel's gone, Beagle's gone, Erickson's gone, and we have a big move on Friday with some additions. You know, what do you think of that trade and what was accomplished by getting some of that money out and bringing in Ekman-Larsson and Garland?
Well, I don't think there's a debate that the hockey team is better right now. And, you know, it seems clear that the organizational mandate, regardless of how much time Jim Benning has left on his contract, is to be a playoff team and to try and start winning and getting back to the team that we saw the season before last that had that great run in the bubble. So, you know, certainly you look at the Ekman-Larsson contract and the term and money on it, and you do wonder if it's going to limit them in the long term, although, you know, it's certainly not buyout proof to the same extent that Louis Erickson's was. So it may not hamper them as much as some people might think in the long run, but I really like the addition of Garland. I think he's a legitimate top six winger that Bo Horvat has been looking for really since the departure of Tyler Toffoli. So, you know, it helps round out your forward group with both Garland and Dickinson and Hoglander a year older and Pod Colson coming in. You start to have a top nine forward group that looks like it could, you know, really help this team get back into a position where they can battle and contend for a playoff spot. And then, you know, Ekman-Larsson, to me, it seems like there's a lot of conversation about him because Jim Benning went out of his way to call him a number one defenseman numerous times, whereas there are people on the other side of the argument that really don't like the contract. And to me, you know, the answer is in the middle there. He's probably going to come in and be an upgrade on Alex Edler on the left side of the blue line. He's going to get some shutdown minutes if, you know, what Benning has said is any indication, and maybe take some of that load away from the Quinn Hughes pairing. But, you know, at the same time, do I think he's a legitimate number one defenseman in the NHL anymore? Probably not. Is he better than he's shown the last few years? I think he probably is. And, you know, as with all trades, the truth of the matter will not avail itself to us for a few years yet. And when we can look back and see, you know, were the Canucks able to, you know, get to a position where they could contend because of this trade, or did the salary cap implications hamper them in the long term? But overall, I would say if you look at Canucks Twitter and the opinions that people have there, it's not as bad of a trade as the people that hate it would tell you, and it's not as good of a trade as the people that love it would tell you either.
So do you like it or do you hate it, Batch? Are you just pleading down the middle?
Yeah, well, I'm riding the fence for now. I like it in terms of, you know, the organizational mandate and, you know, whether the mandate should be to win now and try to push the chips in to get back into the playoffs or not. The fact is that's what the organization wants. That's, you know, what ownership wants. That's what the general manager wants. That's what the head coach wants. That's what the players want. They want to be a playoff team. So if you look at it from a pure trying to win now and get back to being a playoff team perspective, you have to like the trade because it makes the team that the Canucks will ice, you know, for their home opener and the start of the season in October, it does make that team better. It's the long-term implications that worry you. But based on what the organization wants to do, is trying to do, has made it clear since the moment that Jim Benning said he was going to be aggressive this offseason, you know, they want to be back in the playoffs. They want to have a chance to win. They want to give their young players an opportunity to have some success like they did a couple of years ago. And in the long term, I guess we'll have to wait and see whether the risk they're taking right now is worth the reward or not.
Batch, the future can always be fixed. It's the presence in the here and now. Listen, we had a year last year with the Canucks where it was pretty apparent they couldn't spend a lot of money. There was a pandemic. Everything and anything that could go wrong did go wrong for this hockey team. So when you see ownership reinvesting, see ownership pushing, as you say, the chips into the table, see Jim Benning being aggressive, if you're a Canucks fan, and in the Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650, you know, Jim Benning gets full marks for bolstering the front of the Canucks lineup. If this team stays healthy, there's no reason they won't be there for a long ride in the playoffs. Like, the division isn't all that strong. I guess what I'm saying, Batch, is are you surprised that they've done this considering all the factors that have gone on with this hockey team over the last year and where things sit heading into this season?
No, I'm not surprised at all because, you know, first of all, after the way things went last year, it was important for the organization to make a statement of intent to their own players, to show their own players that they were willing to invest in the hockey club getting better. And, you know, for some of these young players who, you know, we think about Pettersson as a very young player, we think about Hughes as a very young player, but at the same time, we see how great an impact young players have at the NHL level early in their careers. So you're arguably looking at the best 5 or 6 years of Elias Pettersson and Quinn Hughes' career starting now. So I can understand from that perspective, you want to surround those guys with players that will give them an opportunity to try and win, try and get into the playoffs, try to experience what a non-pandemic playoff run might be like, so that they can gain that experience and help carry this organization forward. And again, you know, whether if you're listening, it's your personal belief that they should be taking a longer term view or not. The fact of the matter is, this is what the organization wants to do. And NHL players don't care about whether you traded the 9th overall pick. They don't care about what the salary cap implications are going to be for your organization in 5 years. They care about having a good team that they can try and win with now. And, you know, from all the reports that we've heard that the players on this team like this trade, you can understand why, because if you're in that dressing room, you're coming off, you know, hopefully the worst year you'll ever experience as a hockey player with everything that went wrong with the pandemic and the outbreak within the organization. You know, to have a chance to bounce back with a roster that's bolstered and to come into the season believing that in a weak Pacific division, you can make the playoffs and you can have a good year. It's going to be so important for those players. And, after everything that went wrong last year, I'm sure the organization had it as a priority to show their players that they want to invest in this team and they want to support them in their goal of having success.
Batch, obviously there's still some work to be done for the Vancouver Canucks. You know, they make the OEL and Garland trade. There's still a couple question marks with Braden Holtby and Nate Schmidt. Where do you see those two situations going as is? And do you think they can find a taker for Holtby without having to, you know, attach an asset to take him on?
Yeah, that part of it will be very interesting, because I was quite surprised to see that there was a market for Braden Holtby after the way things have gone for him the last few years. Even before he arrived in Vancouver, his numbers were declining, and, you know, with not just the contract, but the fact that he's owed quite a bit more in terms of actual money because the 2-year deal was back end loaded a little bit. I thought that would be a contract that would be pretty hard to move. So, you know, the fact that there's interest and reported interest from multiple teams shows that he's still highly valued around the league as both a player and a person, even if he isn't the goaltender that he once was. So there is a market there for him. You know, I think if you're the Canucks, you want to be a little bit patient, because right now teams will want you to attach an asset because of the cap hit. But once free agency opens, you know, there are teams that need a goaltender. And if one of these teams suddenly finds themselves in a situation where all the goaltenders they wanted to target have been snapped up by other teams in free agency, then, you know, maybe they're more interested in circling back on Braden Holtby. The risk reward of that situation from a Canucks perspective, though, is that, you know, maybe all of those teams find other goaltenders to fill their needs. No one circles back, and then you have Braden Holtby coming back as the backup goaltender for another year, which wouldn't be the worst thing in the world, but certainly when you look at what they have to do in terms of bolstering the blue line and signing some depth forwards, any cap space that they can create for themselves is going to be helpful. So they may have to attach an asset in the end to get that contract moved. I'm sure they're hoping that they'll find a team that's desperate, you know, needs a goaltender and is in a situation where they're willing to take him, maybe with a bit of salary retained rather than an asset being attached. But that's something that'll play out here in the next week or so, I'm sure. And then with Nate Schmidt, you know, that's a tough situation because I like Nate Schmidt as a player, and his 1 year in Vancouver so far, again, is a year where everything went wrong. There was a pandemic. They had the outbreak. So as much as there are reports out there that he doesn't want to be here, I think there's a lot more that they could find in Nate Schmidt if they can get him to come back and join this blue line that has been bolstered to a certain extent. But that said, if Nate Schmidt comes back on your blue line, then your top four right now is Quinn Hughes and Oliver Ekman-Larsson on the left side and Tyler Myers and Nate Schmidt on the right side. And none of those guys really stand out to me as elite defenders or stay-at-home guys that are going to help you keep the puck out of your net. They can all produce offense, and they can all push the pace in the other direction. But I wonder, you know, if Nate Schmidt doesn't want to be here, if you can find a trade that makes sense, if that money wouldn't be better spent on a shutdown defensive type of defenseman instead to help round out your top four.
Brendan Batchelor here joining us on Canucks Central. And Batch, before we let you go, just your thoughts on the draft. Obviously the Canucks don't have that first round selection, and they didn't have a bunch of picks, but just your opinion on some of the business they got done this weekend in trying to stockpile some talent for down the road.
Yeah, I'm certainly not like a prospect guru by any means, but, you know, the Klimovich pick from, you know, just seeing the opinions of some people that have watched him play a whole lot more than I have, it sounds like it's sort of a home run swing kind of pick where if he comes through and his upside translates to the NHL level, it could be a very nice player for them coming into the organization. Of course, there's always risk and reward with that. And then the Finnish goaltender they drafted, you know, I always like it when a goaltending coach like Ian Clark, who now has a long-term contract with the hockey club, is very involved in those sorts of decisions. And it's clear that he has been because he has a track record of not only having an eye for good young goaltenders, but then being able to help develop them and grow them to be great goaltenders in the NHL, whether you look in Columbus, Jonas Korpisalo, Elvis Merzlikins, the guys they have there. So that is a pick that I'm excited to see how that goaltender develops because, you know, for you know, a lot of good reasons, there's a lot of faith in Ian Clark in this market because of some of the work he's done, not just with the Canucks young goaltenders, but in his previous stops as a goaltending coach in the NHL. So you have to believe, when you hear that he is heavily involved in the drafting of a goaltender, that he has an eye for someone that could potentially perform higher than where he was picked and be someone that comes in and helps the Canucks in the crease in the longer term.
Batch, always appreciate the time. Enjoy your week, and thanks for stopping by and contributing. Give us your thoughts on what's going on in Canuckville right now.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys. Appreciate it. Have a good day.
Brendan Batchelor, the voice of the Vancouver Canucks here on Sportsnet 650. And Chad, you know, the talk of the goalie and possibly the ability to move out Holtby, and Elliot Friedman said, you know, the Canucks are having a tough time moving him because they won't give up something right now. And he says there's interest, you know, from teams like Colorado, Toronto, Philadelphia, Buffalo. And, you know, with as many as a quarter of the NHL's teams looking for starting goalies, and also, you know, more on the lookout for that backup and that tandem, I do believe, and Batch said it there, if the Canucks are a little patient, they might find a way to move Holtby out to a team that, you know, needs that solid veteran guy to back someone up.
Totally. And don't forget too, if a trade does not come to fruition, they can always keep Braden Holtby, but also, you know, there is going to be another buyout window. I believe it's right around when the arbitration cases, you know, go through CMAQ. So there is an opportunity to move more money with Braden Holtby in particular if they can't find a trade. But, you know, there's kind of a carousel, you know, around the NHL right now. And you're right, there's a lot of teams that need some help between the pipes. You know, Carolina has three UFA goalies. You know, there's another landing spot potentially. Maybe too much of a big ticket for them. But, you know, there's going to be some movement. So if the Canucks can hold fort and not give up another asset, which, let's be honest, they can't afford to really give up another asset to you know, lose some money in this case, CMAQ. I don't know where you stand on that, but, you know, they don't have a second or third round pick next season. And I guess if you are going all in, then you don't really care about that stuff. But Jim Benning has said many times he'd like to recoup picks, and we've never really seen that. So, you know, I don't think it's the wisest decision to move Holtby with an asset just to move his money.
Well, let me tease the listeners here. We'll get into that a little bit later on in the show because we're up against the break. And Luke Fox from Sportsnet.ca will be joining us momentarily. And we'll get back to the Canucks conversation. But with Luke, we'll talk more in generalities about what's going on in the NHL. Eichel, you know, where is Dougie Hamilton going? All that sort of stuff. There's tons of business to be done here in the next few days in the National Hockey League. And we will get you caught up on all that momentarily. You're listening to Canucks Central here on the home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650.